Hello, and welcome to another edition of MotoGP OD, the podcast about MotoGP and motorcycle road racing in general, although lately we seem to be focusing primarily on MotoGP, but that's fine, because that's what we like. This is our British Grand Prix at Donington race preview, so our topics today include a brief history of the Donington Park circuit, a look at some interesting Rossi and Biaggi podium statistics that I found, the world standings right now, and we'll touch on my predictions a little bit for what's going to happen here at the British Grand Prix, some free practice results, and a service for our English listeners, Chopper Bob's traffic report for Donington, covering the new road plan to reduce traffic congestion at MotoGP. Some helpful tips and things that I found on the Donington website that I thought I'd pass on to in the event that anybody's listening to this before they actually go to the British Grand Prix. So, without a whole lot of further ado, let's get on with the show. Okay, Donington's a really historic circuit. I believe it's the oldest road racing circuit in England. I'm sure I'll get some email if I'm wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure that it is, even though it hasn't been in continuous operation, so that's probably not a really fair statistic. So I wrote up a little article here. MotoGP has raced at Donington since 1987, but the circuit has a much longer history of racing for both motorcycles and cars. Donington first hosted racing in the 1930s, when local garage owner, motorcycle racer and racing enthusiast Fred Craner convinced the landowner at the time, John Gillies Shields, to hold a race on a dirt track on the grounds of Donington Park. The first races were motorcycle races held in 1931, with local racers competing. For 1932, the circuit was improved, and both motorcycles and sidecars raced. In 1933, the track was widened and tarmacked at a cost of about £12,000, I read on one site, and they started racing cars there as well. £12,000 in 1933 was a lot of money, by the way. Racing and track improvements continued through 1938, with a couple of famous car Grand Prix races held in 1937 and 38, with the dominant German teams coming over and thoroughly trouncing the local British racers. Dennis Jenkinson described the 1937 Donington Grand Prix in a book. Until this time, most racing cars would reach 130 or 140 miles per hour along Starkey Strait. But here were the Germans, through the yard, which, by the way, was a farmyard, with smoking tires reaching 170 miles per hour. 170 miles per hour, 1937. 170 miles per hour by the middle of Starkey's, and appearing over the hill at speeds never before seen in Britain. Even at Brooklands, which is an oval, by the way, in case you listeners didn't know that, even at Brooklands, the cars rarely topped 150 miles per hour, but here were seven silver German cars going much faster than that on a road circuit. Plunging over the brow after the old hairpin, the German cars braked heavily for the 180-degree corner, leaving black marks as they rounded it, and rushed back up the hill with blue smoke billowing off their tires. Over the brow, they became airborne before touching down on the finishing straight and rushing past the pits. Another Donington Grand Prix was held in 1938, but the year after that, World War II intervened, and the circuit was requisitioned by the military to use as a vehicle park. After the war, some attempts were made to reopen the circuit, but none were successful, until Tom Wheatcroft, a self-made millionaire and avid racing fan, purchased the circuit in the 1970s in order to fulfill his dream of bringing Grand Prix racing to the English Midlands, and as a place to store his fantastic car collection. There were a few interesting hurdles to overcome, including the fact that part of the circuit down by the Melbourne hairpin is actually in a different county. This might be part of the reason for the shorter national circuit that omits the Melbourne hairpin nowadays. I'm not 100% sure on that one, or if it's just some other reason that they have sort of two layouts for that circuit. In 1977, racing was once again at Donington, car racing, with the ultimate goal of hosting a Formula One event. They probably really wanted the 500cc Motorcycle World Championship, but they figured they'd try for Formula One and see how that worked out. Various car races were held in the Formula 2, Formula 3, Touring Car, and other classes. Motorcycle Grand Prix finally came to Donington in 1987 after 10 years at Silverstone. The great Eddie Lawson won the 500cc class on a Yamaha that year. MotoGP has returned every year since then for the British Grand Prix, with ever-increasing crowds drawn to the event. In 2004, the official attendance was 82,091, up from 72,000 in 2003. They're expecting, I believe, over 100,000 or over 90,000 on the Sunday this year. Since 1999, Valentino Rossi has had the shortest completion times for every race he has run at Donington. Notice I didn't say that he has won every race, because in 2003, he was given a 10-second post-race penalty for overtaking under a yellow. So even though he crossed the finish line more than a second ahead of Max Biaggi, in the record books, he took third place at that 2003 British Grand Prix. Incidentally, the very first World Superbike race was held at Donington in early 1988. And by the way, I found out that the early backers of World Superbike were the France family of Daytona International Speedway and NASCAR fame, which I thought was pretty surprising. So maybe they aren't so bad after all. For more information about stuff like this, you can check out the official Donington Park website at www.donington-park.co.uk. I found an interesting article on MotoGP.com in the news section. Valentino Rossi levels with Max Biaggi. So you read that headline and you think, oh, wow, you know, some kind of confrontation or something. No. Valentino Rossi's third-place finish at Laguna Seca was the 109th time that he has stood on the podium at a Grand Prix event. This is the same number of podium finishes achieved by his great rival, Max Biaggi. Only four riders in the 57-year history of motorcycle Grand Prix racing have stood on the podium more often than the Doctor and the Bearded One. Giacomo Agostini, 159 podiums, 122 wins, 35 second places and 2 thirds. Angel Nieto, 139 podiums with 90 wins, 35 second places and 14 thirds. Phil Reed, 121 podiums, 52 wins, 44 second places, 25 thirds. Mike the Bike Hailwood with 112 podiums, 76 wins, 25 seconds, and 11 thirds. And then Max Biaggi has 109 podiums, 42 wins, 40 second places, and 27 thirds. And the Doctor has 109 podiums with 74 wins, 22 seconds, and 13 thirds. And it went down on a lot more lists and stats and things like that. However, one thing this doesn't account for is the fact that Ago and Nieto and the others were competing in multiple classes at the same time. That is, the old GP350 and the GP50s and GP80 classes that they had. And you know, Agostini would race in both of those. He was world champion in the 500cc and the 350s at the same time. So if you take those podiums out of the mix and you only compare the podiums in the 125, 250, and 500cc or MotoGP classes, Rossi and Biaggi come out considerably ahead. On the other hand, there are quite a few more races per year now than there ever were before. So it's not really fair. You know, that's much like baseball where there's a lot more games in a year. So it all comes down to, like I've said before, where you really can't compare the riders of today very accurately with riders from 30 or more years ago. You know, don't get me wrong, they're all amazing, and these achievements are all very significant, but it's pretty much comparing apples and oranges, so you just have to appreciate them at their face value and see what they're like. Let's talk a little bit about the standings right now after the U.S. Grand Prix. So, 8 rounds into the series, a total of 17 this year, so just about halfway through. Rossi has a commanding lead with 186 points. Melandri's in second with 107, so that's what, a 79-point difference. That's a lot for Melandri to make up. Rossi has won every race except two, and he's podiumed on both of those. So he's really on fire this season. It's running away. Colin Edwards said in an interview, well, you know, that Rossi's so far ahead, I don't think I can catch him, but my hope is to get second in the Grand Prix. That's a little sad, actually. You know, so yeah, my hope is to be first loser. Max Biaggi has 100 points in third place, so him and Melandri are in there pretty tight. I think we'll see more out of Max here. He seems to be warming up. Gibernau is at 95 in fourth position. He's got two DNFs this year, which is not good. Hasn't been really on his game this year. 3 second places, but his other results aren't too good. 13 points, what is that? That's a fourth place. And 11 points, fifth place, 2/5. So, you know, I'm not sure what's going on with Sete, because he was doing great last year, and he's a little cold this year. Colin Edwards in fifth place right now with 93 points. Once again, quite consistent, but not really set anything on fire. He's got a 2/3, just took second there at the U.S. Grand Prix at Laguna Seca. He also took second last year in Donington, so he does quite well at the track. He raced there, you know, World Superbike and everything, so he knows the track. I think it's his kind of track in a lot of ways. So he'll do quite well. I look for him. Would not be surprised at all to see him on the podium here at Donington. Nicky Hayden in sixth. You know, Nicky's got 85 points right now. Got off to a bit of a sluggish start for the season. That win helped him out quite a bit last weekend or 2 weekends ago. And hopefully it'll be the big confidence builder that it often is when you get your first win. And now all of a sudden it's like, wow, I can win. I'm going to keep on winning because I liked it. It was great. And so I think we are going to see more out of Hayden. I think he may be turning a corner there. He took fourth last year at Donington. kind of a lonely fourth, because he was 6 seconds behind Rossi in fourth, and then fifth place last year was Troy Bayliss, about another 8 seconds behind, 8.5 seconds behind Hayden. So Hayden had a solid fourth there. Same story there. Wouldn't be too surprised to see Nicky on the podium. It's definitely going to be a battle between these guys right now. They're on the best bikes. I think they're about the best riders. Rossi, Melandri, Edwards, Hayden. Those are going to be the guys that are on the podium. Melandri will probably be in the mix, but he may have had his confidence shaken a little bit at Laguna Seca. I think he can ride a lot of that off to, you know, the scandalous track and all that sort of thing. But, you know, going down three times in one weekend, that can't be good. He may still be sore from those, he didn't sustain any major injuries, but, you know, it's not good falling off a motorcycle like that. So we'll have to see what happens with old Marco this weekend. Alex Barros is in seventh with 74 points. Alex isn't having a real great season. He managed to win in Portugal, but other than that, it's been relatively unspectacular. Loris Caparossi, excellent rider. He's just handicapped by the poor performance of the Ducati. I'm not sure what's going on with the Ducatis, why they can't seem to get it together. I'm kind of surprised he's in eighth. Shinya Nakano, a rider that never gets enough credit, considering the Kawasaki that he's riding. Ninth place with 55 points. So he may be able to pull it out a little bit better and get up there. What did he do last year? Oh, he was 15th last year. Nothing spectacular there at Donington. I'm not 100% sure how that kind of track is going to relate for the Kawasaki, if it's that sort of track or not, or if it matters. And the Bridgestone tires may be another thing that are bringing into it, you know, that come into play, Bridgestones compared to Michelins. 10th, Troy Bayliss. Troy should be doing better. He's on, you know, he's on the Camel Honda bike. He's only got 47 points, not half what Barros has, but certainly it's not that great. He's had one DNF, and the rest of his finishes have been, you know, fairly dismal. Carlos Checa, also handicapped by the Ducati, unfortunately, another great rider. Ruben Chaus on one of the other Yamahas is in 12th place with 33 points. He's just poking along. Makoto Tomata, another Honda, he should be doing better too as well, down in 27th. But he's had four races that he didn't, because he had that string of races where he missed. So that explains a lot from Tomata. And then we go on down. 14th place, John Hopkins on the Suzuki with 27 points. 15th is Olivier Jacques, who probably won't be racing at Donington anyways, racing for the Kawasaki. And he managed to pull that second in China, which was just like the miracle. It's, wow, it's the 69 Mets all over again. Tony Elias on another Yamaha. He's had a string of non-races that he didn't do. Alex Hoffman, once again, missed quite a few. That's who Jacques was replacing. So, you know, and then we're getting down. Kenny Roberts. What's going on, Kenny? Why are you in 19th place behind all these guys that have only raced, you know, two or four races this season? He's had three DNFs, two 15ths, or actually, maybe not DNFs, excuse me, three no points, two 15th places, a 14th place, 16th place. And, I mean, you know, Kenny, you're getting pretty thoroughly trounced by your teammate there. Then we go to Roberto Rofol on the Privateer Ducati. David Checa has raced only a couple races. And then James Ellison, Shane Byrne, and on the WCM and Proton Machines. And, you know, those guys are, they're so far down in points. That's the underdog story there. And, you know, it's sort of root for those guys just because they are the underdogs, you know, the Minardis of Motorcycle GP. And like I say, when you actually see them and you, because they gave them no camera coverage whatsoever. So I was lucky enough when last weekend or so at the U.S. Grand Prix, and you watch these guys, and I mean, they're riding as hard as they can, and they'll say it in the interviews. Shane Byrne, you know, this is going to be his home Grand Prix, and he had an interview where he basically says, I don't think I can do like, you know, Nicky Hayden, where it's my home Grand Prix, and all of a sudden I can turn it around and win it. You know, the bike is not there. So poor old Shane. So that's where we're standing right now. Like I said, Rossi's absolute commanding lead, 79 points ahead, halfway through the season. You know, if I'm not wishing Rossi bad things or anything like that, but I mean, if all of a sudden he has a couple disasters, you know, a couple DNFs and stuff like that, but come on, you know, you win 6 out of 8, and then all of a sudden you're going to stop being on the podium. I don't see that happening. So I think I would say safely that Rossi's pretty much got this year locked up. It's not mathematically locked up, of course, and anything can happen, but it's, you know, to all intents and purposes, I think Rossi's going to be this year's champion. As for this race, like I said, look for Rossi to win. Rossi considers Donington his home circuit. He lives in England. He likes the track. He's won every race that he's ridden there since, 1999, you know, except for the 2003 where he had the 10-second penalty. So he'll do real well. He'll win it. And then I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to go Rossi, Edwards, Hayden, Melandri, Gibernau for my top five there. We'll see where I'm at, and it's the bet and win British Grand Prix, so maybe I should bet on that. Although I probably won't. Okay, as I record this, free practice number 2 for the MotoGP class just finished up there at Donington Park. And I would give you the results, but unfortunately, I can't get onto the MotoGP.com website. It seems to be hideously overloaded. I've been trying for about 20 minutes, and I'm pretty much out of time. I've got to wrap this up, so we're not going to talk about free practice number 2. I did see the results for free practice 1 about an hour and a half ago or so. Unfortunately, I didn't print them out or save them or memorize them or anything. But I do remember that Colin Edwards came in first. Colin might be sending a message here. He likes the Donington track. He does fairly well there. He came in second last year, like we talked about. So, you know, he may be able to come through. But typically also free practice times, everybody's sandbagging, or you just sort of never really know what's going on. They're getting their setup and everything. The times are relatively meaningless in the grand scheme of things. The top 9 finishers were covered within about 6/10 of a second. So everybody's coming in at very similar times there in the top 9. And we had in the other riders in the top 9, Rossi was second, Hopkins was third, amazingly enough, Barros fourth. After that, there was Melandri and Gibernau, and I can't remember the exact order. Hayden was ninth. We'll just have to see what happens then on the actual race day on Sunday. That's the important part. So tune in for the next podcast, and we will have the wrap-up for that.
As a small service to our English listeners, of which we have quite a few, I've received several emails from listeners in the UK, and happy to have you aboard. Love to hear from everybody, so send those emails. So, as a small service to our English listeners, I found a story on the Donington official website about a new road plan to reduce traffic congestion at the MotoGP. Last year at Donington, traffic was horrible, and apparently there is a new road plan to reduce traffic congestion this weekend. Hopefully it works. From the Donington website. Fans visiting this year's British Motorcycle Grand Prix at Donington Park, July 22nd through the 24th, should have an easier journey to and from the circuit, thanks to the implementation of a new traffic management strategy for the weekend. The main changes to the riding strategy are, car and motorcycle traffic will be separated, leaving the motorway at different junctions to reduce congestion at Junction 24 of the M1. I think they were trying to do that last year, but I was in a cage with my family and everything, so it wouldn't have helped us anyway, but it was awful. Northbound M1 traffic for Alton Towers, which is usually directed off the motorway at Junction 23A, will be directed 8 miles further north before being signposted off the motorway at Junction 25, reducing the amount of traffic exiting at Junction 24 and sparing Alton Towers visitors from delays. And I assume they mean that visitors going to Alton Towers that are going to be spared these delays, not visitors to MotoGP coming from Alton Towers. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe 16,000 people from Alton Towers are going to show up. There will be more electronic variable messaging signboards, making it easier for road users to follow the advised routes, assuming they read them. A police observer helicopter will be airborne over the circuit and surrounding roads during peak times on Sunday, July 24th, feeding back information to Leicestershire Police's circuit-based traffic control center. Communications have been improved with the neighboring Nottingham East Midlands Airport, which is located between Donington and the M1. NEMA will ask airlines operating out of the airport to warn their passengers to allow for their journeys to take longer than usual that weekend. There will be more entrances and exits to the main car park, easing traffic flow. That will be a huge help. Here's another tip. When I drove in on Sunday, we only went to the Sunday last year, and we drove through the village of Castle Donington, and there was a kid waving a sign in his front yard about advertising car parking in his back garden. And I think it cost us about 5 pounds or something like that. And we saved a ton of time because we, you know, we were already in a standing still line with, I don't know, at least a quarter of a mile, probably more like half a mile to go before we even got to the car park. And then it was a nightmare. So we saved a ton of time doing that, both in and out of the track, especially when we left. And it was only a little bit further of a walk. Like I said, it was probably less than half a mile. 5 pounds well spent. And speaking of the car park, last year at Donington, I went to the official souvenir store and bought a couple or three shirts. Great shirts printed on both sides. Beautiful artwork. Not a bad price. I think, if I recall correctly, they were 11 or 12 pounds or something like that, which is actually pretty fair for an event t-shirt. So I wasn't upset with that. But on the way out, going through the car park, I found the bootleg shirt guy, and he had these shirts for 5 pounds, and they're only printed on one side. But I'll tell you, these shirts have lasted and lasted because, you know, my wife wears them to sleep in. I wear them all the time. I bought like four of them, and, you know, yeah, sorry, supporting the bootleggers, but he was an honest bootlegger because they're very good shirts, you know, so who knows, maybe he's bootlegshirt.com, you know, we pass on the savings to you because we don't have to pay royalties. I don't know, something like that, but there's a cool shirt. So if you see him, he wasn't English. He was, some sort of international kind of guy with stacks of blue Rossi t-shirts, sort of on the ground, was looking around for security or something to show up. And they were 5 pounds a piece, like I said, so it was a hell of a deal. If you see him, say hi and grab a shirt or two. Okay, traders and caterers at the MotoGP will be prohibited from leaving the circuit on Sunday before 10 p.m. Ooh, wow, 10 p.m. Ouch, it's a long day for them. And they also say on the site that if you are visiting the MotoGP, please follow the signs. Good luck finding the signs, but read them if you do. If you're going to the British GP and you hear this podcast before you leave, also make sure to check the Donington website for traffic directions and the parking plan and maps and all that good stuff at www.donington-park.co.uk/MotoGP. Well, I just recorded all of that stuff for our English listeners, failing to remember that this podcast will be going up Friday morning, which will be Friday evening in England, so chances are not too many of them will hear it. But I'm going to leave it in there because I like my little bootleg shirt guy story, and I talked about it in the intro, and I don't feel like re-recording the intro because I'm too lazy. So look for the post-British GP wrap-up on Monday or possibly Tuesday. Might be a little bit late this week. I have a Navy Reserve weekend, so I'll get back Sunday and watch the race and maybe take some notes and stuff and then record a podcast for hopefully not too long. I don't want to delay it too long. And thanks very much for joining us. If you send an email or anything, I will send an answer. I found one. The guy resent an email, said, you know, hey, I think you might not have got this one. And sure enough, I had not received it. So sometimes emails get lost or blocked or what have you. But if I get it, I try to reply. And if you'd like to send in any questions or comments, feel free. If you want maybe to send in a question or a suggestion for a story or something like that you'd like to hear, that'd be great, too. Send it in. If you want me to say your name, tell me how to pronounce it, and I'll do my best. And if you happen to be going to Donington, you know, think of me. I wish I was going to be there. If you have a small recording device, feel free to record something. Ask me about how you can send it to me, you know, either email. Sometimes the files get kind of big, so it might not attach to an email, but whatever. I'd love to hear something like that. So anybody going to Donington, feel free to participate and submit picture links and all that, and I'll try to put them on the website, even though I seem to be hideously far behind on doing that. So, thank you very much for tuning in. It's another podcast in the bag, and we are out.